You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Robert Lee.
Shane Lowry is your Open Champion 2019. Big hugs from player to caddy. Emotional scenes. Incredible, incredible golf this man has played all week.
It was a masterclass from the Irishman at Royal Portrush. We'll hear Shane Lowry's reaction to his victory and chew over the big talking points from the 148th Open. And then our focus shifts from this year's final major to a new event with a familiar feel, the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational at TPC Southwind in Memphis. That's all to come on the European Tour Race to Dubai show. Hello from me, Dan Roebuck, and alongside me, Mr. Robert Lee. Rob, how are you?
Good, thank you, Dan. Yeah, imbued after watching a tremendous Open.
And you had the week off from your usual televisual duty, so you could sit back, take it all in. Was that different for you?
Yes. Well, yes and no. I mean, I've done it before. The Open is an amazing major. To work the Open, you certainly know you've done a week's work when you do that, because the broadcast hours Thursday and
you're
Friday.
You're on about half five,
6:30
in the morning,
in the morning, and kicking off air at about 9 o'clock at night. It's an epic, but well worth it because it's such a brilliant championship.
Also, on the Race to Dubai show this week, we've got journalist and YouTuber Peter Finch. Peter, you said that you were thinking about going over there, but in the end, you stayed in England to watch it at home.
Yeah, I think if you want to watch a golf tournament, I don't think this is the big secret in the world, actually being on site, you're going to get the, you know, the atmosphere and the feeling of what it's like. And certainly to be there this time would have felt absolutely unbelievable. But to actually watch the golf and assess what's going on, you're probably better watching it with that bird's eye view from the TV, especially with that weather that came in.
I wasn't overly
disappointed not to be out there.
Well, that was on the Sunday, wasn't it? And there were squalls on the Monday as well. But have we missed a trick here? Because I reckon a lot of people would have thought, do you know, it's difficult to get to. Tickets were selling fast. But it's turned out to be maybe the best Open of the modern era, best Open ever.
It had a bit of a Ryder Cup feel to it, to be honest, with the songs and the ole ole and the way the crowd were getting into it, particularly with Shane Lowry over the weekend. I had a bit of Ryder Cup-itis. That's what I got from watching it. I think it was one of the best Opens in recent memory.
Should we have gone?
Yes,
of course we should.
It's always easy to say in hindsight, though.
Shane Lowry, obviously, makes this as well, doesn't he? A win for an Irishman, a Southern Irishman in Northern Ireland. It is the golfing union of Ireland, the island of Ireland. I mean, a real fitting winner for a player that's obviously done well at that course previously. He won the Irish Open when he was an amateur, couldn't take the big check that went to Robert Rock that year. He's had difficulties, sort of first world problems, if you like, over the last couple of years.
Not more than 12 months ago, he was you know, looking at the game of golf as if it was a chore and an anvil sitting on his shoulders, and it all turned
around. He went to
the PGA Tour after the win at the Bridgestone, had a PGA Tour status. Then that didn't work out. He's kind of a homeboy, loves Ireland and loves Europe. Came back, won the HSBC, got the career back on track. And then to turn up and win this Open, which was obviously in Northern Ireland, first time in, I don't know, 50, 60 years, whatever it was, it was absolutely incredible. He's always been a really good links golfer. However, missed the last four cuts and
the last four Opens,
which it doesn't seem to make sense. But when he had the lead and when the weather forecast was bad, if you saw conditions in Baltrae when he won, they were horrendous. When the weather got bad and he had a four-shot lead, he looked like he was the perfect guy in the perfect spot.
It was the perfect guy in the perfect spot, though, on the Saturday, record-breaking 63.
For me, that was probably what made this Open. I mean, I think that last day, because of the conditions, obviously he's handled himself incredibly well, but the conditions were so tough that really no one could make a run at him. They were relying on Lowry to step backwards, which obviously he didn't do. That Saturday, with the crowds, with the weather, with the way that he played, that, for me, was the best kind of day of the tournament. And just because of a new course record, shooting a 63 in a major championship, which I know a few people have shot low rounds recently, but still, what an incredible round in a major championship under that pressure. That was, for me, the best thing about this week.
Did you peg him as a potential winner prior to the event?
No. It's one of those things where it is a throwaway comment. You say, oh, you know, he's grown up in Ireland, he's a great Lynx player and all the rest of it. But as we mentioned, he's not made a cut in the last 4 years in an Open. So it doesn't make sense that he would all of a sudden be the favourite. But the fact is, he had literally tens of thousands of people roaring him on, and he's managed to channel that into this amazing victory.
It's a difficult thing to do. Home favourites can falter. We're going to talk about Rory McIlroy a little bit later on the show, but there's a different type of pressure. When that builds up after a 63, and he's the only Irishman, there's only one or two, I think, that made the cut, and the only Irishman that obviously massively in the mix, he's leading, it's cranked up like mad, isn't it?
You either use it or it uses you, and I think it depends on your personality. Shane's got that kind of affable, everybody likes him, way about him. He's very popular, not only amongst the spectators, very popular amongst the players. It was noteworthy watching him go through the every walk to every tee was lined with, they were sort of 5-6 deep, just in the ropeways between green and tee. It was noticeable over those last 2 days when other players were given it the side swipe fives with the crowd. Shane had the hands in the pockets, head down, and he was in that competitive place. He wasn't there to make friends and glad hand anybody. He was there to perform, and like you were saying, that the performance on the Saturday, the 63, was electric. It really was, and that's probably the way it worked out with the bad weather and his form in bad weather, where he won it.
We always hear about lots of numbers and lots of previous performances when we talk about players in situations like this. A lot of people, Peter, were talking about his US Open capitulation a few years ago when he was 4 clear. Different circumstances then, but he's got to have drawn on what happened that time. He will have been aware that he maybe had to do something differently here. And that could have been, as Rob was just pointing out, you know, you don't get involved with the fans that much. You do it differently.
I think it's different. It's obviously different circumstances, different tournament, different conditions, all the rest of it. And obviously, you know, with that home support. But I think the interview that he gave after his round on that Saturday was very telling, where he's very honest about it, you know, which does seem to be a trait that he's shown, you know, just being a normal, nice guy. And he was just chatting about, well, actually, that US Open capitulation, I think that maybe the word he used, it hurt him, definitely. And he just said, I hope I'm ready. And I think I am ready to actually win. Because you're not going to learn about how you handle that situation unless you're in that situation. There's very few people who get the lead in a major and then don't feel nerves and go on to win first time.
Bogeyed the first on the final day. Rob, what were your thoughts when he carded a 5 on that par 4? Did it depend on what was happening elsewhere?
No, I think it's not an easy opening hole for a start. There's out of bounds down both sides.
How
is
that out of bounds,
rare,
incidentally? Because it's on the property.
I asked that question yesterday. Why is it out of bounds? But apparently it's just, that's a feature of the hole. That's the way it's been.
I know the left-hand side's tradition, because when it was last hosted there, the course didn't own the ground between the first and the 18th.
So you're actually out of the property at
that
stage.
There was like a slither of land, which sounds a bit random, but it's great. And then, to be honest,
they could have changed it.
They could have changed it. And there's no real need for it to be out of bounds that close in on the right either, but
makes it tricky.
It makes the hole completely different.
Horrible hole. Horrible opening hole, and a bogey there's not a disaster.
No. I think it was maybe the best thing that could have happened to him, actually, getting that putt from that distance and banging it straight in the middle. It's not an ideal start, but it probably settled him down quite a lot.
Tommy Fleetwood obviously playing alongside him. If he'd have birded the
first...
Here
we come. We're going to get a slew of ifs now, are we?
Well, of course.
Go on then.
If he birdies the first, if he birdies the second, most people were birdying the second.
If my auntie.
Yeah, I know what's going. Yes. But these are the things that we talk about when you review an event. I mean, there wasn't the pressure applied early on, and that surely had to happen for Larry to maybe...
It's such a difficult day to apply pressure, because normally you think, if you get on a bit of a run, make a few birdies, apply pressure that way. The way to apply pressure was to not drop any shots.
Well, to stand still.
And standing still was extremely difficult. And what was that golf course, all Lynx golf courses, all Open Championship golf courses, if they get windless conditions like they had on the Saturday, the top players in the world will shred them. It doesn't matter if it's Muirfield or it's Royal St. George's, they're going to have good scores. It's going to happen. Once the wind gets up, that's where the course gets its defence, and that's what happened in the final day. Well, and I'm glad they got a bit of everything that
absolutely.
Week with the weather. And I really relished a really tough, squally, windy, rainy final day when standing up and standing still, as you say, was like going 4 or 5 under par.
Yeah, it was a perfect examination because you got everything. you literally got everything within those 4 days, and you saw the course at its easiest, at its toughest, at its most brutal, and its most forgiving. It was just, that's why the Open's so good, because you do get these mad, crazy switches within the weather, not just day to day, but like minute to minute, pretty much sometimes.
Larry birdies 4, 5, and 7. No one else is doing that, though. I mean, you know, then they're giving him the opportunity to relax into that opening nine. Then when the bad weather comes, he starts to drop a few shots, but he's too far ahead at that stage. It doesn't matter.
Someone had to do something. I thought 10 under par would win. I was hearing 30-mile-an-hour winds coming in, rain coming in. I thought this could be horrific for the field. Anyone that can get to 10 under par, I thought, would win. And actually, it would have won.
Yes, he would have, yeah. He would have, Tommy was 9 under.
So yeah. Shane Lowry could have dropped 6 shots and still won.
That can't be in your mind, though, can it?
No, you can't think about dropping shots. But the one thing about Shane was, when he was looking at the scoreboard, Tommy was the guy he had to stay in front of. It was quite clear. His scenario was very... it was crystal clear. Stay in front of Tommy and I'm going to win this. And so he kind of could keep an eye on it, and he could see it was difficult for Tommy as well. It was really hard to... you know, par 5 holes and make a couple of birdies. Very, very difficult to do that. So he had all the toolkit that you needed to grind it out on a difficult day and keep his buffer intact.
I did think the challenges were going to come from somewhere. I thought it was going to be difficult for Tommy Fleetwood. Well, yeah, but Brooks Koepka, you think, this is a man. He can go
low.
He
bogeys the first 4
and
holes.
And he bogeys the first 4. I mean, that's out of character.
Yeah, but that's how... people don't realise it. People go, oh, yeah. They don't realise how difficult that golf course was.
No one else bogeyed the first 4 holes.
You're a chopper.
You're an amateur.
I was hearing amateurs talking about it on radio coverage yesterday. I mean, there are 15 handicappers. They don't understand how difficult that golf course is. Ricky Fowler loves tough links conditions.
Are you comparing Brooks to a 15?
Scrunts one out of bounds at the first. Ricky Fowler, he starts with a double bogey. He was a guy that maybe could have made a run.
Are you surprised, though, Peter, that no one, you know, posted a better score? I mean, we saw Justin Thomas get to 8 under and then fall back. I mean, Francesco Molinari, I think, finished 11th in the end and probably finished his round before the bad weather came. And he suddenly went up and up and up and up. Surely someone from that middle ranking starting 20th might have posted 10, 11.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying...
Are you saying they all bottled it?
You say you're highly disappointed.
I'm saying the field didn't play their part.
No, you're not accepting how difficult the golf course was.
I think it's easy to say, like, if you are looking at Tommy Fleetwood saying, oh, 4 or 5 behind, okay, time to make a charge. And then you say, okay, this is the hole to start on. Oh, it's 480, it's back into wind, it's 30 miles an hour, and it's absolutely torrential rain. It's easy to say. And
pars were good scores yesterday.
Pars were exceptional scores.
Yeah, pars were good scores.
Shane Lowry had the best score apart from Tony Finau.
In the top end.
In the top end. Yeah. And he shot level par. Level par. And that was the best next round.
I guess if Tommy Fleetwood shoots level par, he still loses by 3.
It just shows you. They're the best players in the world, and that's how difficult the golf course was. I mean, I don't know why you can't grasp this.
I'm just trying to make
You're trying to say that the top player should have gone out there in 20th spot and shot 64 and put pressure on Shane. Well, it just wasn't on.
He won by 6 in the end, and time to get the thoughts of the new champion golfer and hear a bit of the atmosphere at Royal Portrush.
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, incredible. I don't know what, like... it was a difficult day because I just... I don't know what to say. I can't hear myself, to be honest. It was just... you know, it was quite a difficult day. And I knew that when I had a look at the leaderboard halfway around. But, you know, I knew everyone else was struggling, so I just tried to hang in there as much as I could. And obviously I did quite well. And I can't believe this is me, to be honest. I just can't. I'm so happy, like, in Ireland, to win the Open. Look, I just can't believe it. Like, you know, it's everything I've ever wanted in the game of golf. And I've got it right now, so. I didn't let myself think of it. Well, I did think about it, but I didn't let myself only hit my tee shot on 17. And then I allowed myself to enjoy it.
He managed to shut it out for most of the final round, but it crept in big time, didn't it, in that particular interview?
It did, yeah. But you know what he did really well on the round? He just miniaturised the game to one shot. I know they always say it's a really boring thing to hear, one shot at a time. It's so hard to do, but he did that really well for the entire round. Just my next shot, my next shot, my next shot.
And I think his caddy did an exceptional job.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think throughout the round, and he did mention this in the interview when he was chatting to his caddy throughout the round, and he kept saying to him, I can't stop imagining winning. I can't stop imagining myself holding the claret jug, which goes against, you know, any sports psychologist say you stay in the moment, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But then Bo was bringing him back. And he was saying, listen, focus on the shot, stay with me, stay with me, stay with me. And that's what he did. You know, them two together just talked everything through so well. And when you actually got the mic on them, when they were on the course, like some of their interactions were fantastic to actually listen to.
Isn't that what caddies do for every single player? These are the conversations that they have when everybody wins majors. Is this out of the ordinary?
Richard Boxall and myself. I mean, we come from. There's not many of the caddies around now. Billy Foster's there. Wobbly's still there.
Just remind me of your old caddy,
Edinburgh Jimmy.
Yeah,
he's still around.
Yeah.
But there's that.
Edinburgh Jimmy.
Edinburgh. They all had nicknames. Great there name. Was the Barnsley Brain.
Where was
Edinburgh
he from?
Jimmy. The Seagull. The Flying Fish Finger.
Hang on, who was the Seagull?
Seagull. Seagull's still around. Keith.
Keith. Yeah. Why was it called the Seagull?
Because from a great height.
This is a family
because
show.
Because from a great height. And Boxy and my greeting to the caddies were, how's it going? Who are you ripping off this week? I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke between players and caddies. Caddies do a phenomenal job. And I think if you find the right chemistry between you and your man, he can bring the best out of you. And obviously, Bo, I could hear, like you say, his caddy speak to his player to make sure that he was grounded and making the right decision so he could commit to the shot. That continued for the whole week, and the two of them were absolutely fantastic.
New World Ranking is 17. He's the new Race to Dubai leader. He's the fifth player from the island of Ireland to lift the claret jug. The other four?
Ooh, Fred Daly.
Ah, you've got the hard one.
Yeah.
Or the older one.
Darren.
Yeah.
Podrig.
Yeah.
Shane.
Yeah.
And
Rory.
Rory.
Yeah, of course.
Of
yeah.
course.
The forgotten man.
The forgotten
well,
man
he
of
was
the
after,
event.
He was after
he was
the
after
first
the
two
Friday.
Days.
Yeah, we'll get
he tried valiantly.
We'll get to Rory shortly. Four-time European Tour winner. Won at Abu Dhabi at the start of the year. That was a Rolex Series event. How important was that win
massive,
for him? Because,
massive.
You know, he'd had opportunities the previous campaign, I think, I can't remember which European Tour.
He was in a low. He was in a low place in golf, Shane Lowry. America hadn't worked out. Come back to Europe, and then all of a sudden, and I remember that final round in Abu Dhabi, he didn't play his best golf from tee to green, but he was so stubborn and he hung in there really well, held some key putts in that final round. It was really impressive. And for him to win like he did, all of a sudden then you start to think, yeah, you know, I'm actually not a chopper. I'm actually a very good player. And once that confidence comes seeping back, he's a very natural, not only is he a natural guy, he's a natural golfer. Mm.
You suggested that he wasn't one maybe to follow, not on your shortlist or mine. And he admitted ahead of the Open, you know, he was at a little bit of a low ebb and didn't really know what to expect from his game.
Yeah, like Rob was saying, he is a very natural golfer, though. He's not a robot. You know, his swing isn't as repeatable as some of the other guys out there. So he needs a lot more to fall into place and to click. And what you tend to find with someone like Shane is he'll, you know, win and then he'll back that up with potentially another win, but generally good performances. Then he'll go off the boil for a while when his swing's not quite there. His short game's always there because he's just exceptional around the greens, but because of the way that he plays golf, he will be inconsistent. That's just the way it is. He's not Molinari.
And I suspect he's not the type of player that's going to try and change all that to try and get a bit more consistent like some players do.
No, and I think it may
or
be...
Or attempt to do.
Don't weaken the strong to strengthen the weak. Bob Torrance used to always tell me that.
I thought it was something from the Bible.
I was going to say.
Yeah, maybe he got it from
there. I thought we were going to go ancient Rome or something.
Ecclesiastes or something. No, don't weaken the strong to strengthen the weak. So that's what Shane, he's doing the right thing. Except that he's a streaky kind of a player. When he gets on a run, he's capable of anything, as he's shown us.
We do hear of players, you know, they win a big event and think, right, if I'm going to win the next one, I'm going to start changing my game.
Yeah, and for some players it works. It all depends on the personality. And I think what you've seen over the last few days, if not, you know, throughout his career, about just what a normal kind of natural guy that he is. And if he starts to lean into that, you know, who knows? But, yeah, I think he will be pretty inconsistent. I don't think we will say that he's going to go out and win five times next year. But you never know.
Well, Graham McDowell was the other Irishman to make the cut, and he spoke afterwards about a momentous day for Shane Lowry at Royal Portrush.
Well, I mean, listen, I was standing on the 18th green with Padraig Harrington, and he's, as a three-time major champion, he's looking around incredulously, thinking, saying, how's this happening? You know, it's the realisation of a dream to be here at Portrush in the first place, and then to have an Irish player win this Open Championship. It's dream stuff. You know, Shane's one of my very good friends here on the tour, and I always knew he was a special player. But now we can really believe that. I'm sure he's won a lot of fans around the world this week, and I'm just very proud for him. Great performance.
Graham McDowell talking about Shane Lowry, who has been terrific for the sport, great for Ireland, obviously. He's not played Ryder Cup previously. I think his wins have come in the wrong years.
Well, this doesn't count for the Ryder Cup.
No, I know.
He gets nothing towards the Ryder Cup for being the Open champion. Mm. That all starts in September. That's funny, isn't it? You think players that have played Ryder Cup, you think Shane Lowry, he's played one somewhere along the line.
Does he start from naught then when it comes to Ryder Cup qualification?
Yeah.
Not just in terms of, obviously, everyone's on the same amount of points, but the fact that should he get a pick for the next one just because he's won an Open, or is he almost got to do it all again?
He's got to do it all again.
Yeah, yeah. There's no, you know, at the end of the day, we are still quite a long way out from that Ryder Cup, so...
And you might have, the captain might have, Podrick might have...
You said I was harsh before.
But the captain might have people like Sergio that hasn't quite made the team, or, you know, those that haven't qualified automatically that have Ryder Cup pedigree. For Shane, if he's around the same sort of spot to get a pick, it's going to be hard to pick him. So I think Shane will be absolutely hell-bent on playing his way into the team, being one of the automatics. Doesn't want to get into that scrum for a pick, because the captain's always going to go for tried and tested. Unless somebody has won the last five and just come up a point short, that might be a different thing. But experience counts for a lot in Ryder Cup. So Shane will be hell-bent once the scoring starts in September to play his way into the team. And I tell you what, it's a great thing for him to focus on. Now he's got the Open Championship tucked away. What's the next thing to aim for? The next thing for him to aim for is the Ryder Cup.
Harrington's the captain, the next one. Does that count for anything in his favour?
Nah, I don't think so. I think Harrington's analytical enough not to be kind of swayed by just where someone's from, I would have thought.
So you two, give him the big up, yeah, win, and I'm trying to sort of suggest that maybe the field give him an easy time of things. And now when I'm giving Shane, yes, he's going to get a Ryder Cup spot, you two are like, no chance.
You're saying he's going to be in that 10? Are you saying?
I'm just saying it's a tick in the right box when it comes to a pick if he's not playing particularly well.
I think you should always just be wary of kind of recency bias. It's always easy to say, oh my God, Shane just won the Open. Yeah, he should be in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
He might play terribly. We've just spoken about how he's a streaky player.
Yeah. It can work against you. Oh, he only picked you because you're Irish, so you don't get the pick. That can work completely against you as well.
Yeah, why are you trying to put this on Podrick? Just give him a break.
Social media reaction. From an Irishman amongst the three that we've picked out here. First of all, Francesco Molinari says, incredible performance at Shane Lowry Golf. Enjoy every single minute of it, starting from the party tonight. Thanks to everyone in Portrush for making it an unforgettable Open for all the players and families. Thomas Bjorn says, there is not much to say except, Shane Lowry, you were amazing this week. I don't think I've ever enjoyed watching an Open as much as this one. And Paul McGinley, Shane, you lap the field, ya boy, ya.
You're looking at me with those pearly blues that you've got, and I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
Just, you know, want your comment on Mr. McGinley's tweet.
On ya boy, ya.
Yeah.
Little bit of Irish there. Well, McGinley's very pro-Irish, and so he should be. You know, he posted a fantastic Irish Open at Lahinch. That was a fantastic success with a great winner in John Rahm. He was there or thereabouts this week, didn't quite happen for him. But I have no doubt in my mind that John Rahm will have his name on the claret jug at some point. I know we say this about, oh, this player's definitely going to win a major. You know, you get very glib. But I think John Rahm, and he's proved it before with two Irish Open wins, has what it takes to win on a links course. So his turn will come. But yeah, McGinley, all the Irish pros, I guarantee you, past and present, are thrilled that Shane Lowry won this.
How many majors does Shane Lowry win in his career? What are we saying here? Over, under, 1.5, 2.5? What are we saying? Does he win another?
Who knows? There's only four of them every year. If you win one...
If John Rahm wins this week, can I say over and under?
If you win one major, are you a failure? No. If you win one major. It doesn't matter, does it?
Can you answer the question?
He's won the Claret Jug.
Opinion.
His name's on the Claret Jug. The rest doesn't matter.
If John Rahm had just won and I said over and under 3.5, 4.5, you'd have a pop at that one.
Yeah, I think...
I would, because Rahm has shown at his age what he can do at his age.
He's 32.
Shane's 32, so he's in kind of golfing prime now.
Which is average age of a major winner, I think, isn't it, over the last 10 years or so.
That's right, yeah.
John Rahm's what, 22?
Yeah, or 23,
isn't he? Yeah, he's still freakishly young. Like, you just expect him to be older.
What he's done in his short time as a pro has been very impressive.
And consistently. Mm. That's the key.
Yeah.
I'll get your thoughts on Tommy Fleetwood's major prospects after we hear from the man himself. Tommy, who battled hard all through the final round, but could not stop Lowry romping to victory.
You know, at times it felt closer than what it finished. Of course, 6 is a massive, massive margin, but it doesn't feel like that when you're playing. And if I could have just, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, if I hold 2 or 3 putts over those holes and you get some momentum early doors, you never know how it's going to pan out. Struggled in the middle and then I played some pretty good golf. 14 was a bit of a killer, unlucky with the tee shot, and then, you know, made a mess of the hole from there. You know, it's obviously sore and emotional when you come off having got so close, but Shane's been amazing this week and it was his time.
Tommy has thrown in one bad round in majors previously when he's done well in them. Do we class Sunday's round as that one bad round?
No.
Or is it different because it was the final days in the last pair, the conditions are what they were? He was trying his best to chase down Lowry.
74's not a bad round.
There's an asterisk there, isn't there? I think he was in the mix all week, wasn't he?
There's only one guy going to win. And the guy started 4 shots ahead of Tommy Fleetwood. Very difficult to make up that ground in that difficult weather unless Shane had a collapse.
Yeah.
And Shane showed no signs of collapsing whatsoever. Even a bogey at the first is not a collapse. And then he didn't birdie the par 5 and then he chucked in 3 and 4 holes or whatever he did. He had 3 quick birdies in the front 9 and sort of re-established his position at the top and never looked like falling from there.
And Tommy still feels like
he's finished second, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's on the right trajectory, isn't he?
Yeah. Started the last round in second, finished in second. That's another, you know, top 3 in another major. His time will come. He's too good probably not to win, but at this moment in time, there's a lot of players who are probably too good not to win a major.
But
there's,
you know,
just so many now.
You know, Tommy Fleetwood's going to win a major, right? So he's got to get past Koepka and Johnson and all Rory McIlroy and all the players in the top 10 you can imagine might win a major. You've got to get past all those to get it done. It's very, very difficult. Koepka was there again. Some of the other big names didn't perform this week, as we know, and you might get onto that. But every single major, if you're going to be the top man, you have got to beat the very best that there are in the game of golf. It is hard to do.
A word on the conditions. We've mentioned them throughout so far. Were they almost perfect for an Open? We got a bit of sunshine. We got a day where the scoring seemed fairly easy. Then we got that massive squall for 45 minutes on the Sunday. Is that what you want from an Open Championship?
I do, yeah. I mean, it's nice to see. You know, normally, week to week, these guys are playing in perfect conditions on perfect courses. And all of a sudden, they are thrown into this situation which they never normally have to deal with. And you saw, like, by the amount of stingers that were being hit on that final day. You never see that. Normally, it's up in the air, it's flying as high as you can, landing as soft as you can. The only maybe regret is that after that initial squall, torrential downpour, it would have been nice if it calmed down so other people could have made a run. But that's part of the beauty of the Open, the unpredictability of it. It's fantastic.
They brought the tee times forward, didn't they, on the Sunday? Should they have just let it go as it was? Would it have made any difference?
I think you're picking at straws. I think, are you saying really that if the weather had been different,
the result might have been different? No, I'm saying why did they do that? Were they concerned that it was some really bad weather? Because if you got
30, 35 mile an hour winds with some of those greens that are raised up, you might have had can we finish issues if it really got bad. I know the greens they're never quick at an Open because they can't be in case it gets windy, but you get to 35, maybe pushing 40 miles an hour, and let's face it, you've got a 3,000 mile run up to the east coast of America. If that comes in worse than you think, then they'll go, why didn't they bring them forward? You're on a hiding to nothing, aren't you? I don't think you can say that the weather would have given you a different result. The best player of the week won, and it was Shane Lowry.
Massive success in terms of the Open being held in Northern Ireland for the first time since 1951. A sellout. I didn't know this, but sellout for the first time ever
I think, and I wasn't aware that you could just walk up and get tickets on the day for previous Opens, and he wasn't sold out previously. So a huge success.
The sellout was months and months ago. Yeah, they were talking about this, and bang, they've sold every ticket.
Did those new holes work? I heard a lot of the commentary team on the telly saying that they were great additions and probably made the course actually better than traditionally it was.
I don't think anyone came back with any negatives about them. I mean, if people hadn't have constantly pointed out that they were new, you wouldn't know.
The players raved about the course. They were raving about the course, how good it was.
Do Americans actually like it? They all say the right things after the rounds. Do they really like playing links golf?
I think the ones that have the potential to win do.
Yeah,
that's the same as any course you go to. If you hate it, then the chances of you not playing well there are greatly increased. But it's just so different. That's the key. Day to week to week on the PGA Tour, that is not how they play golf. And it's a test of a true player if they can come over and adapt the game.
Rory McIlroy was the favourite going into the event. And for those that might have had a financial interest in him, on him, was their interest finished half an hour after he started?
Well, did he start with a treble or a quad?
Quad.
And then it finished with a treble?
On day one.
On day one?
Yeah.
With some fairly decent golf in between. But, I mean, if you start with a four over and end up with a three over...
But what happened, happened on that first hole? I mean, was that nerves?
Yeah.
Everyone gets nervous.
Yeah, 100%.
Everyone gets nervous.
But this is Rory McIlroy, who's under scrutiny every single time
I think he got himself whipped up into such a lather. He wants to win it so badly because he's the player going there as the favourite in his home country of Northern Ireland, playing an Open in his lifetime as a child. He would never have thought he could have played an Open at Northern Ireland.
Off the tee.
All of a sudden it happens and he's disaster.
He's only human. Like, at the end of the day, you know, you look at him and you think, oh, you know, he is this modern professional, uber athlete and all the rest of it. But, you know, just listen to the interviews that he gave and just try and understand what it actually meant to him to actually play in this event and just how disappointed that he actually was, not just for himself, but kind of for everyone who was willing him on as well. And at the end of the day, it's a very fine line with that much pressure on if it's going to work in a positive or a negative. And the only problem that Rory got on that first hole, when it started to go wrong, it didn't stop. He found the places that he just simply couldn't find on that hole. And once that happens, it's really hard to get it back.
But he got casual, didn't he, on a couple of the holes on the back nine. Was it 16 when he missed a tiddler? And
you went to tap in and missed it.
Yeah.
And then you end up missing the cut by a shot with a great shot. 65 in the second round.
But that second round, have you experienced anything like watching on television on a Friday night, whatever time it was, you know, sort of 6 o'clock, and you know he needs one more, and he starts to turn. I think he needs three, and he's.
But the crowd were trying to will him in, weren't they?
It was great television.
It was brilliant. They were trying to will him in. They were doing their very best to get another squeak, one more birdie out of him, and unfortunately he couldn't birdie 17 or 18.
I mean, off the back of that,
it's hard to push. It's really hard to push and shoot better than 65 around Royal Portrush when you need one. It's really difficult.
Off the back of that, the interview. He was very emotional. He seemed to win an awful lot of fans, got a lot of respect for it. Everyone realised what it meant to him, whereas previously they, you know, might not have seen that because, you know, Rory is this superstar. Did he win more? I know it sounds a ridiculous thing and, again, a bit of recency bias, but in the immediate aftermath, did he win more fans by the way that he tried to make the cut, the interview afterwards, than he would have done if he'd have won the event?
Jack Nicklaus was always the go-to model. You know, even if he had a horrendous first round, he would be trying tooth and nail to shoot the lowest score, whether it makes the cut
or not.
But
just the emotion that he showed.
I think Rory's always had, the mouth guard has always been off with Rory. Rory speaks his mind, and sometimes, not wisely, sometimes to his detriment, he says exactly what's on his mind. He doesn't have a filter. And I think that's the first time we saw the emotional filter off. He's normally... Even when he's uptight or incensed or whatever, he's pretty controlled. That's the first time he sort of let his emotional guard down. And I think Rory's a very affable, likable superstar anyway. Does he have more fans because of that? I'm not sure. I think he's very popular.
But you reach out to different type of people when you act that way. If he just wins the event, people that might not be interested in golf or only watch it once a year.
They're not interested in golf when they see a bloke crying and now they're interested in golf. Don't be silly.
Potentially. You can make headlines in different ways.
Don't be silly.
Of course you can.
You're being
silly. Of course you can.
It was more of a human side of him. And bear in mind, this is Rory.
This is for people who know Rory.
Yeah. And
if you didn't know Rory, it's just another bloke crying.
And what you would say is with Rory, you know, it wasn't that long ago that people were actually questioning his desire to play.
Yeah.
You know, he's not winning. Is it, you know, is he got too much money or the rest of it, blah, blah, blah. And I think that interview and this event has shown that actually, you know, it still means a lot to him to actually play well. And especially in events like this that are so personal. And yeah, people love that human side.
You know, he
thing.
Makes the cut, finishes seventh. We don't see
He's done that loads of times.
But we don't see that interview. We don't see that emotion.
No.
So you'd rather him cry and miss the cut?
I'm just saying
than
different.
Make the cut
it's
and finish
not my
seventh.
Personal preference.
I mean, everyone
Rob.
Everyone there would have liked him to play 4 days, wouldn't they?
Of course.
Of course, have Rory
I'm
there for 4 days.
Just saying we've seen a different side to him.
There's not,
for the layman like me, Rob.
For me, there is not
you know,
a better sight in golf.
You know,
I'm just going to tell
well.
You. For me, there's not a better sight in golf than Rory in full flow. When he's
tears
on his game,
golf, what we're talking
I'm talking about.
About
I'm not okay. talking about being upset because he missed the cut. I'm talking about when he's in full flow and he's producing, he's strutting his stuff on the golf course. There isn't a better sight in golf than when he's doing that. And he came here on form, right at the top of the world rankings, as the favourite in Northern Ireland. And he absorbed all that pressure. I think he had to find a way to make it just like another week, but he couldn't. He was enveloped by the expectancy of the crowd, the emotion of the event, and we saw that come out when he missed the cut. He was bitterly disappointed.
Hasn't won a major since 2014. When is he going to win the next one? How many is he going to win?
He's won four, hasn't he? Yeah. Very quickly. Kepka's won four. Who's more likely out of Kepka and Rory to win the next major?
Kepka, I'd say.
You have to say Kepka.
Who knows?
Rory goes to... And now it's a massive wait. From now, July until April, to the next major. We are going to have a major itis between now and then, eagerly waiting to get to Magnolia Lane. That's Desperate Housewives, isn't it? Magnolia Lane.
I don't know.
But
I do other things during the daytime.
Hey, listen, who knows where Rory's going to go next?
But unfortunately for Rory, he gets to the Masters, and it's the same conversation. I watched Desperate Housewives. Who's your favourite?
I don't know.
So Rory's going to get to Augusta with the same conversation, and the conversation for him lasts for this amount of time. It lasts from July until April. Will Rory complete the career Grand Slam at Augusta? Unfortunately for him, he's got to listen to that diatribe in the build-up to Augusta.
You say unfortunately, that means he's won the other three. That's a good thing, isn't it? There's nothing unfortunate about that.
It is a good thing, but he's the only guy out the whole field at the Masters that has that going. The rest is, can he win a Masters? Rory's got, can I win the career Grand Slam? He's the only guy in the whole field. That's extra pressure for him. It's really hard for him to turn that on. I really hope Rory wins at Augusta, and I think that's the key to freeing him up for the rest of the majors.
Rory's in action this week, of course, in the WGC. We'll get to preview that shortly. Two other storylines, first of all, that I want to talk about. Two things that have been bugbears when it comes to professional tournaments over, well, quite some time, but they've come to the fore over the last couple
cheating?
Of years. No, one of them isn't cheating, although sort of, no. First of all, the Robert McIntyre, Kyle Stanley 4 issue, and what are your thoughts on that? McIntyre calling out Stanley for not coming out, and Stanley turning around and said, well, there was enough members of the party that shouted 4. Is that any excuse?
See, I think as a golfer, it is incumbent upon you. If your ball is heading towards where it
Even
might
if
be
someone
dangerous,
else says it.
If there's one person and his dog standing there, or there's a throng that it can't possibly miss, you have to shout four. You learn that very early when you start playing golf. If it's going near somebody and a golf ball, I can assure you, is very hard when it hits you, shout four. You should do that. On the PGA Tour, they have marshals that do this, that like bringing a plane in. They've got the two paddle boards up in the air and they're going, people down there watching the marshals for, is it going
left?
We
saw that at the Open as
well. Is it going right? But it's still not right that you don't shout four. You should take responsibility for your golf ball and shout four. And that's what got up Robert McIntyre's nose. Particularly as it turns out, who it hit, his caddy's mum.
Any excuse? I mean, Stanley's come back with a fairly stout defence. I think he's wrong, but any excuse?
No. I mean, all Stanley had to do was just say, yeah, you know, I should foul four. He took umbrage to the fact that, obviously, Bob McIntyre's relatively new on tour. But to be fair, in this particular instance, there were other people shouting four. I think it had a personal edge, obviously, because it did hit his caddy's mum. It was on the bounce. It didn't cause any damage. That's not to try and excuse it. But what I would say is that this situation actually, it points at a much bigger issue, which is actually more of a problem. The fact that when it is going towards a crowd, when nobody shouts for, you know, if people are around you, you know, surrounded by 12 people and they're all yelling for, you know, fair enough, you could maybe just keep your eye on it. But if you hit a shot towards someone, surely your instinctive reaction is to start yelling. Surely.
Yeah, most times, if it's winging towards a crowd, the crowd are on the edge of play, it could be winging into the rubbish. It would help you if it hit someone and stopped it going further into the rubbish. Now, that may be slightly cynical.
That's almost like a tactic.
That may be slightly cynical, but there's no excuse for a player not shouting four. There is no excuse.
Yeah, and it's...
It's end of. Yeah. Whether they can hear you from 300 yards away or not, or the wind's blowing the wrong direction, you do it.
But nothing will change until actually some action's taken on it. And not fines. Fines don't work. Penalise them shots within the tournament, because then it's public. It's not, you know, just some PGA Tour pro having to pay $30,000, which, if they're a good PGA Tour pro, means nothing to them. Actually saying, actually, Kyle, you docked two shots because you didn't shout.
We're much better on the European Tour at shouting four than they do there on the PGA Tour. And we're much better at policing slow play as well.
Well, that's the other thing I was about to mention. JB Holmes on the last day, called out by Brooks Koepka.
Well, Brooks
didn't affect JB at all.
Brooks is a grip it and rip it guy. That's the way he plays the game. He doesn't muck around. JB Holmes is torturous to watch.
That was literally the worst pairing for Brooks you could possibly imagine. It was just, I think, on the first tee is what summed it up. When JB Holmes' name was called, he hadn't got his glove on. He hadn't got a club out. He was still trying to figure out what to do. Took ages over it. Sniped it out of bounds. Then went through that whole routine again. Brooks must have been doing his absolute nutting. But again, it's one of those things where, from what I've heard, actually, JB Holmes is actually trying to get a little bit quicker. And you could probably just, probably not pick on him too much because he has just shot on 87.
No, pick on him because it's ridiculous. Did you watch him win the final round at Riviera Country?
It was ridiculous.
Now, there's just no excuse for that. It's ridiculous.
Is that a tactic as well? I mean, Brooks bogeys the first four.
I've heard JB Holmes in the past say, "I'm going to take as long as I want on the golf course." Those were his words. "I'm going to take as long as I want." Now, if you're a slow player, you can upset a fast player. If you're a fast player, you can't reverse it to a slow player. I remember all the years back when Rory Sabatini walked off, Ben Crane hadn't hit his second shot. Rory Sabatini finished the hole, walked on to the next. He still had to wait for Ben Crane. It didn't help him. Still had to wait for Ben Crane to finish and move on and catch up with him. So, it's not hard. You work on the practice ground on how your swing works and how you can start the ball left and fade it a bit. Whatever you're working on, you could also work on your routine to make it acceptable. JB Holmes, it's not acceptable. The speed, the length of time he takes.
Does it help the fact that these things have happened in a major championship, so it brings it to the fore and into the newspapers and into the discussion boards?
It's been in the fore for a long time. A long time. Everyone knows that slow play is an issue for the players, but it's more an issue for the fan as well. You know, at the end of the day, if you're watching a tournament and you know you've got to be sat there for 5.5 hours if JB Holmes is in the last group. But JB Holmes is becoming the crown prince of slow play. He's not the only one. There are a lot more people on tour playing slow, or as slow as JB Holmes, but JB Holmes is getting called out on it because he's actually winning events as well.
Just the 87 shots from JB.
Yeah, I mean, that takes a bit of time, doesn't it?
That's the big killer time.
How much money did he throw away on that?
He was playing well over the first couple of days, but do you know what I honestly believe? The longer you take to play the game, the harder it is. I think it would help JB Holmes if he could find a way to speed up. Be more committed straight away. Be ready. Have your yardage sorted. When the other guy's hit, you're ready to go.
Yeah, you don't get
your book out there and start, you know, the whole process. You should be able to hit a shot in 45 seconds. It's simple.
Some firsts for you, Rob. Take these down. Larry, 16 under, 197, was the lowest 54-hole score in Open history. Ryan Fox made Open Championship history on day one by carding the first back nine of 29 in 148 stagings of golf's oldest major. And for the first time in major history, both Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson missed the same cut. Mickelson looked a bit of a shadow of his former self, didn't he? How much weight did he lose coming into this in about 2 days?
But Phil does things...
15 pounds in a week.
Yeah, but he doesn't do things by half, does he?
Obviously not.
It's so ridiculous to lose that much weight. Was he drinking like coffee juices or something, whatever it was?
I don't know. It's hard to drink a lot.
His heart was going like you can't believe. And it can't be healthy to do that. That's typical Phil, isn't it?
Was Tiger fit? Do we think the conditions is back?
Just the way he's walking, the way he was see that picture of him tying his shoes? Like, he had to sit down to tie his shoes. I mean, that's never...
That's not a good sign.
Tiger's played one event in between four majors. He's played one event. That's all in between four majors. That tells you all you need to know.
What's the over?
Because that wouldn't be his preparation.
What's the over?
That
wouldn't be his, that's what's not the his over choice. And under on Tiger's major hole?
Tiger, with one leg and a blindfold, could still win Augusta.
But if he can move.
That's the only one we reckon.
Well, because he knows. Augusta is so peculiar. If you get Augusta, you get the same guys that play well there nearly every year. It's the easiest place to guess who's going to contend.
Yeah, and that's probably the only place that Phil's going to contend as well. Because any course now where there's rough, if he keeps on swinging the way he is, he's just going to be too inconsistent.
He's talked himself out of that. I mean, his go-to thing is just, and he's on social media the whole time, I'm just going to bomb it. I'm just going to smash it miles. That's all he wants to do. Well, that's not going to get it done.
We need the top 10.
In the end, nobody cares how far you hit it. They care what you achieve.
We need the top 10 from the Open.
Phil's got it all backwards. Top 10 from the Open. Yeah. And I can go down to 10th because Patrick Reed.
Indeed, he did.
Your pick for top 10.
Go on, Patrick.
Finished 10th on his own with a final round of 71. And he won just under €200,000 for that. Danny Willett tied for 6th with Robert McIntyre. Incidentally, that makes you safe for next year's Open Championship. All these players, Tyrrell Hatton, Ricky Fowler, Lee Westwood and Brooks Koepka were 4th, Tony Finau 3rd, Tommy Fleetwood 2nd, and as we know, Shane Lowry, the Open Champion Golfer of the Year for 2019.
We've touched on Brooks Koepka.
Brilliant player, best player in the world.
If he'd putted well, yeah, would he have won?
Yeah, well, I think he would have done, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure, because, I mean... Lowry just won by so many, yeah. But like he did put for him very, very poorly, especially over the first 3 days. He just struck it so unbelievably well. Obviously, had a bit of a head off in the first few holes of the last round, maybe playing partner induced. Who knows? But
I don't think he would. I don't think Brooks would turn around and blame JB Holmes. When I was looking at the draw, players on the same score, who could play with who, there was Fowler, Rose and Koepka. And one of those was going to pull JB Holmes. And I was thinking, if Koepka doesn't pull JB Holmes tomorrow, he could win. Yeah, he could do something. I was really thinking that. And when I saw it was Rose and Fowler and Koepka and JB, I thought that wouldn't be the best matchup for the world number one.
Great TV there.
Lee Westwood, another top four in a major.
He's still playing great golf, isn't he?
He led on Saturday morning, or co-led, didn't he, I think. Had another great chance. Seemed to be driving it well. He had just one or two bad holes, didn't he?
Yeah, but how are you looking at this? You're looking at a difficult golf course, and you can't hit every fairway and every green. You can't do that.
There's so much goodwill behind Lee Westwood. He's 46 now.
The guy who won shot 63 in the third round. How are you going to live with that? He had 267s. He went out in the last group and he shot 63 in the third round of an Open Championship. And now you're trying to pick holes in people who finished top five or six.
I'm saying, is Lee Westwood going to win a major championship? Is he? That's the question I'm asking.
Well, it's a silly question because he might do. Does he play well enough? Does he hit the ball well enough still? Yes, he does.
Is he going to finish his career the best player if he doesn't win one, not never to win a major? I mean, given how... I don't know what the number is of top tens that he's got, but it's a lot.
Monty, you'd have to argue with that one, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you put him in the same kind of boat. Maybe Monty was more consistent.
Monty, with his order of merits.
His eight order of merits. Yeah, I don't know. I just think the way that whenever there's a little bit of pressure on with Lee's putting, it doesn't look like the nicest stroke. But at the end of the day, he's chipping. Like this week was so much better than I've seen it kind of in the past. And
he's still a beautiful golfer, he does just hit it
so unbelievably well.
He would
well.
Have become the oldest major winner since, whatever, 100 years or something, wouldn't he?
Since Old Tom, I think, wouldn't
he? Old Tom Morris, yeah.
We need the top 10 in the world. Has there been some reshuffle with the best players on the planet and their standings,
now,
Rob?
I'd love to give you the top 10 in the world if only I had it. I have it. Would you like it in reverse order or from top down?
Top down,
because Brooks Koepka is the best player in the world. He is the world number one. Dustin Johnson is 2nd. Rory McIlroy 3rd. Justin Rose is 4th. Tiger's 5th. Francesco 6th. Bryson DeChambeau 7th. John Rahm 8th. 9th is Justin Thomas, and 10th is Patrick Cantlay. Shane Lowry, with his name on the claret jug, is now inside the top 20 in the world. 17th, he is the Irishman. Going along very nicely, thank you very much. Just in front of Paul Casey.
Last week's predictions. We had two free picks last week. Weren't restricted by our Race to Dubai rule. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. We were all fairly good. I went for John Rahm and Patrick Reed. I was ridiculed by Richard Boxall for going for Patrick Reed. Ridiculed. And he said, no chance. Ridiculed. He ridiculed me. He finished 10th. And I went for John Rahm, who finished 11th.
Well, what's important is what Boxall picked.
Boxy went for Brooks Koepka and Matt Wallace.
So he got a top got
10,
four out
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, we both got 10 points each. And Michael McEwen, who is our guest Scottish golf writer, went for Koepka as well, and Ricky Fowler. He got 15 points.
What, you could go with the same player?
What
gives? I mean, every time I come in here, I give the two picks away, and I don't get the pick.
It wasn't picked up upon as we did it. We were having such a good time, and unlike this week, we were having such good fun.
Yeah.
Everyone was agreeing with me. It was great.
That's the only way you like it.
You just want to fill it with yes, man.
Why didn't he win? Is he going to win another 10 majors?
And this week, it's all very different, all very serious. Presenters on 155, I'm doing you a favour again, Rob. Co-presenters 80
yet.
And the guests on 70. Fantasy Race to Dubai game. If you want to get involved, go to the My European Tour section of europeantour.com. Lee Findlay still leads the global leaderboard. Top 10 in the Race to Dubai. We've already trailed the fact that Shane now leads the Race to Dubai standings. Rob will shuffle his papers again.
I have shuffled. I've come up with the right piece of paper. Top 10 looks like this. Shane Lowry now leads the Race to Dubai comfortably by 500 Race to Dubai points. Bernd Wiesberger second. What a comeback after his injury. John Rahm third. Matt Wallace fourth. Kevin Kisner's fifth. Tommy Fleetwood sixth. Louis Oosthuizen is seven. Jorge Campillo is 8. Xander Schauffele is 9. I don't know if he's going to figure towards the end of the show. Xander Schauffele, is he? I'm looking for a nod over there.
We can talk about him if you like.
And Benjamin Hebert.
Peter actually flagged
Benjamin
this up.
Benjamin Hebert.
I've forgotten
10.
About it. We can talk about Xander Schauffele since you've just mentioned him. And this is the hot driver that he nearly used but didn't. He got called out on it. What was it, on the Tuesday? How does that work? Do they get tested on...
There's a selection of tests.
Yeah, it's a random selection. As far as I'm aware, a random selection of players get pulled in. I think it was about 30. They go through the test, and I think 3 or 4 people actually failed. But because apparently when you do this test, it is meant to remain anonymous.
Anonymous.
Even one of that as well. But his name got leaked, and he wasn't best pleased about it. But I think rightly so, because it's not... It is his responsibility, ultimately. It is the driver that he's playing. But he can't test his driver.
You haven't got that kit. No. You get a driver off the manufacturer. They're all trying to get every driver face to the limit.
Qualify, this is basically an illegal driver that he shouldn't have been using.
By 0.00111 of whatever it is.
The trampoline effect.
The face was too hot.
Yeah.
The face was too hot. But...
Had he been using it previously?
I've just sent him $500 to get that driver. I want it.
Apparently. But this is something which... I'm not sure the USGA actually does it in the US, but this is something that...
They
the
do
RNA
it in the Open,
does.
Yeah.
Yeah, the RNA does quite regularly. And I think the Japanese Open, they did a test there. I think 4 or 5 drivers failed over there as well. And it is very fine margins when you start to push the driver to the very limit. It's almost impossible, because if you get given a driver by the manufacturer, you get it out of the tour truck, you go out, you
do
too well.
You have to assume it's...
And it's like a nanometer or whatever it is. They drop a ball bearing on it or something, whatever it is. It's something that's very heavy, lands on the face. It's nothing. It's milliseconds. It's a breath. That's all
it is.
Give
it an inch, though, Rob.
We're not talking about an inch. I wonder if it's 1 inch longer that he gets with the 0.00001 that it was illegal. What advantage he gets?
Yeah, it's tricky.
He was annoyed at the fact. Okay,
some fans called
okay,
him out
through
bit,
no fault
they?
Of my own, you found my driver to be by a percentage of nothing illegal. So I get another one. Test that. Is that okay?
He got a bit of stick, which I thought was a bit unfair.
I think it was the way it was just reported. Yeah. It was the problem.
Yes,
yeah. It was basically the people were coming out and saying, "Well, he's cheating." Now, cheating is a massive word to use in sport. If you label someone
even more
a cheat,
so in golf.
Oh, in golf, it sticks so much. And I think the players were giving him some light-hearted stick, but I think some of the fans and some of the commentators maybe went a little bit overboard, because cheating, especially overtly cheating...
They weren't
cheating,
saying he was deceptively long, were they?
No, they weren't. They said, oh, God, well, he hits it so far, such a smooth swing.
He is deceptively long, by the way.
He is, yeah.
Xander.
But it's one of those things, like in another sport, if it's doping in athletics or whatever, you know, Lance Armstrong, he was cheating.
Yeah.
Like, he was cheating. Like, getting a driver which is 0.1 over the legal limit that you don't test,
know about.
You know, that's not cheating. It's just that he got caught up on it. But maybe
and
more of this
he makes
be done.
A good point. Not everybody in the field had their drivers tested.
Mm. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So if his driver was slightly illegal by their measurement and he was caught, it stands to reason if they tested 30, I think that was
but
the number
Peter,
they tested.
Peter was saying...
Yeah, yeah.
So there's 120 exactly, they yeah. didn't test. Yeah. In numbers-wise, there's going to be others.
Which is quite weird, if you think about it. If they're doing a test to test illegal drivers and they only do a small yeah. sample size... Is it like
but I guess
a,
that's like drug testing in other sport. They don't test everybody, do they?
I think in athletics they test everyone.
Oh, do they? I don't know. I know
so.
In football it's just random. Well,
all the winners get, and the podiums get tested.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But then what can you do if you've won the Open and your driver's a bit hot? Are you then disqualified?
That'd have been great at the end, wouldn't it?
Can you imagine?
So Shane can't come out to accept his trophy. We've just done a quick test.
Unbelievable. Moving on. Other news. Clark Dennis came from six shots behind to win his fifth Stayshaw title at the Winston Golf Senior Open at Vorbeck in Germany. After a stunning final round of 63, 9 under par, the American made five consecutive birdies in his last six holes to set the target at 15 under, and with overnight leader Jose Maria Olazabal bogeying the 16th hole and unable to move back to the summit. Jamie Spence, incidentally, of this parish, of course, friend of the show, guest of the show, tied for fourth, level with the home favourite Bernhard Langer. I always ask Jamie, I say, you know, when you're playing, are you playing well? You know what Jamie's like, never lets us in when he might sort of run a place at a big price.
He's an Arsenal fan, isn't he?
In an event where we can sort of have a couple
of quid on. Try to keep a low profile.
Next on the Stayshaw Tour, this week's Senior Open presented by Rolex at Royal Lytham and St Anne's. Tips this week for the Senior Open? This is off the menu a little bit, but you were telling me in the canteen.
Well, I was telling you in the canteen because I was texting Darren Clark during the week because obviously for him, Royal Portrush, very emotional week. He tripled the last on Friday to miss the cut. A bogey would have got him into the weekend at the Open, and he was absolutely pig sick. And I said to him, do you know what? And I can't work out that there is. I don't believe anyone's a winner of the Claret Jug and has won a Senior Open as well, has got the two sitting on their mantelpiece. So, you know, use it for motivation. So I'm going to go with Darren Clark, who's going along quite nicely on the Champions Tour. So one good week takes care of business for him.
There's suddenly a lot of very good players that have just come on the Champions Tour.
Steve Stricker,
Ritty Gusen, and you know, players that that have played very well in worldwide golf over the last few years. Moving on, Scotland's Callum Hill carded just three bogeys in 72 holes to win the Joran Bank Open in Austria, his second European Challenge Tour title, and in the US. See any of this one last night, Rob? I bet you did. Jim Herman.
Got a tip, putting tip from
the
president.
Barbasol. Did he?
Yeah. He was 24 under for a difficult course. 24 under for three rounds.
Did you see the scores on the Saturday?
They were ridiculous, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But 24 under for three rounds. Yeah. And he worked at one of Trump's courses or something and apparently gave him a putting tip. And
beat Kelly Kraft down the stretch. I watched a little bit of that last night, as you do. This week's event is the WGC FedEx St Jude Invitational at TPC Southwend. The FedEx St Jude Classic was a regular tour event, Rob, as you know, and I'm sure Peter does as well, on the PGA Tour, staged in June for 60 years, between 1958 and 2018, 30 years or so at Southwind in Memphis. I would imagine, Peter, that it was very, very hot in June in Memphis. In late July, it's going to be steamy.
I would imagine that there won't be many overlayers on show this week in Memphis by the looks of it. And from what people have said, I don't think it's probably the most exciting golf course. I think from what other people have kind of said, this might be a little bit of a come down week from seeing the rough, rugged amazingness of a Portrush to a pretty flat course by the looks of it in absolutely baking heat. I think it's going to be a much different feel to this event, I would say. And it'd be interesting to see. I always like watch the golf.
And they're always great fields. Whatever we think of the courses, fantastic fields, aren't they, WGCs? Rob, is this a course, an event that you've been to in the past in your travel stateside?
Not been to Memphis, because I would have gone to the home of Elvis Presley.
Really? Are you an Elvis fan?
Yeah, I love a bit of Elvis. Love a bit of
Peace
Elvis.
Peace in the Valley?
If you say so.
Favourite Elvis tune?
Guitar Man.
Guitar Man. Mine's In the Ghetto, I think. TPC Southwind, 7,244 yards.
Short by modern standards.
Short by modern standards. 94 bunkers, 10 water hazards. Hole number 14, it says here, 239 yards. Consistently ranks as one of the toughest par threes on the PJ Tour. Dustin Johnson, the defending champion after winning the event for the second time last year. DJ didn't play... I say he didn't play particularly well. Whenever I saw him on the telly at the opening, he seemed to be sort of putting for eagle or birdie.
DJ's got the same amount of majors as Shane Lowry. So yeah. Give us your under-over on DJ then.
I think DJ will go over... I think he'll go five or more.
Do you?
Yeah.
Nah.
Big shout, that.
Yeah, massive shout.
Big shout.
Well, what's the line then? What is the line? 2.5? What's the line? What's the sort of over and under that's fair with DJ?
Well, I mean, you're saying four and a half.
Obviously, I think he's going to win a lot. I mean, the over and under line might be sort of 2.5, mightn't it? He's definitely going to win 3.
It's not definite.
It's not definite. Definitely. It's definitely not definite.
Do you know what? When I was asking you two questions, you said, oh, well, who knows and who knows? And now it's
is he going to win
definite,
a major?
Not definite.
Is he going to win 5 majors?
DJ this week, chances? Defending champ?
I mean, he's a pretty above average player. I'd give him a chance. But
it's not many people in playing. There's only 68 players in the field.
Yeah.
Less than that.
No, it's not a big field.
You've not got
DJ,
that many
DJ's
players
DJ's not
beat.
The defending WGC champion, incidentally. He's the player who won last...
The PJ Tour event.
At Southwind.
And you basically essentially got a cut's already been made, and everyone who's made the cut is playing 4 rounds. That's pretty much how many people are playing.
Yeah, I think if DJ wins, that's probably a good steer on who's going to win. Going to be a long hitter, flies it a long way, hits it high.
Has Rory McIlroy got a point to prove this week?
Last round he shot was 65. Mm. He's my man.
Are you picking Rory this week? You don't have to go selections just yet. What about the two who duelled-ish at Portrush, Messrs Lowry and Fleetwood? Do you think, certainly from Shane's point of view, Peter, this might be an event too much?
I'd be amazed if he's up there in contention. Just simply because I can't imagine him not enjoying... the next few days. If he's not doing, he should do. He should be absolutely...
If I was Shane, I wouldn't have gone there.
He should be absolutely living over the moment.
Ooh, I've got a bit of a twinge in my elbow from, you know, knocking back a couple of pints, and quite right too. Enjoy the claret jug. Have a week off. I can't believe Shane's going, but...
What about Tommy Fleetwood?
Yeah, I mean, Tommy's ripe and ready to go to win in America. He hasn't done it yet. He's looking to do that for the first time. Why not? There's a lot of big names playing. It's a WGC event. I think you're right. I think it's, you know, normally long hitters do well around there, so...
Does Brooks Koepka get up for WGC events? We know what his major record is like, and then when he plays in regular PJ Tour events, he's not interested.
He's got to learn to get up for...
How does that work, by the way? How can you play so well in the majors and then, you know, not so much?
It must be for him. There must be a lack of motivation for him, because there's no reason why he can't win any other tournament that he goes to, but... He has a mindset that, you know, when I get to the majors, this really counts, whereas the other stuff doesn't really count. So I think Brooks would want to win more regular events as well. Of course he does, every time he tees it up.
I think he's almost defined himself now as someone who is going to turn up in the majors and will not turn up anywhere else. He's won that one other time, only on the PGA Tour, that CJ Cup. I've got half a feeling he'd actually like that to be struck from his record. So the only tournaments he wins are majors. He said, I'm not bothered about turning up in Memphis. Who cares?
But then again...
He's retired till April now. We won't see him again.
You can't do that, because you curtail your career by just thinking about the majors all the time. You just can't do that. He's got to get out there and win some normal events.
I really don't think he's bothered. Like, if you actually look at him, he's like, yeah, don't practice, turn up for majors, that's the only time I practice.
But we hear so much about players having to tune their game for majors. He's doing it, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he's found a way to do it. So if that's the way
to do it, every other player should be trying to copy what he does.
No one playing throughout
the
year.
He's
just the best player in the world. That's what he is. And he when the best player in the world is stimulated, which is what he is at the majors, he's going to contend, and that's going to continue. He just needs to find a bit more stimulation before the other 50 or 48 weeks of the year.
Is something off with Justin Rose's game at the moment?
He's not hitting it like he wants to, that's for sure. He's not playing at his tip-top best.
He still can't seem to finish outside of top 20, though. That's just how good he is now. Like, he's not hitting it amazing, but he's still good enough to be up there. But just below that level he needs to win. He has already won once this year. We shouldn't really forget that. But
a new kit and everything, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot gone into
yeah.
this year for him. New look, new clubs,
New clothes, new ball. The new clothes, big difference there.
Yeah.
Who else should we be mentioning? Who's on our shortlist that we've missed out here? You mentioned Patrick Cantlay,
Webb
Simpson, Justin Thomas. Is he free from injury again? John Rahm. Brooks has finished second in this event, or at least at Southwind, not at this event.
Has he?
Mm, a few years ago.
Oh, he must have forgot what week
it was. That was before he got into the sort of major mindset. Have we missed anyone out that should be on our shortlist before we get some selections here? Matt Kuchar, Jason Day, Gary Woodland, who I think Mrs. might be expecting. Hideki Matsuyama. These are players that we thought might do well in
Matsuyama,
the Open Championship.
Matsuyama, who, by the way, will be playing in that skins game with Rory and Tiger and Jason Day for... they won't have to pick a pocket or two for the money they'll be getting paid to play in that, will they? Be getting plenty of Bula. No
chances
doubt.
This week, Hideki?
Matt Wolf is playing.
Matt Wolf, one of the new breed.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
Yep.
How does he get it? He gets in off the back of that 3M win.
Yes, he does.
Come on then, because we're
dallying. Do we get two? Is it one or two?
We get two. It's.
I've already said I'm having Rory. 65 in the last round.
One European and one non-European. Or at least one European. So Rory McIlroy for Rob Lee. Yes. And Peter, one for you while we wait.
European?
Yeah. Do you know what? Well, do you know what happens with this show, you two? You know, we get told that we're previewing an event and you have to have two selections. When it comes to the part of the show, when I ask for predictions, usually, you know, the guests say something.
Do you remember
this
Joe 90? Do you remember Joe 90? He used to get, when he got the, he'd go in that circle thing that spun, and when he got the chip in his head, he could be the person he was meant to be for the thing that needed doing, and then he'd come back to being little Joe 90.
Really, but
well, so I'm in the wrong seat. That's why I'm all confused.
I'm just confused. There's so many. We talk about so many players That's and true. How many majors are going to win. I kind of think that no one's ever going to win again. I'm going to say tie. No one will win. Tie first.
Come on, we need two picks. Rory for Rob.
Yep.
I'll go Rahm, European.
Rahm for Peter.
I'll go Cantley, US.
Cantley.
I'm going to have another European tour member, Xander Schauffele.
Yo, yes. Shrewd.
Thank you.
So Rory Schauffele, Rahm and Cantley. I am going to go for Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
He's won at the track
course
twice
and distance. Course
previously.
And distance. Yes. Yes.
And Tyrrell Hatton.
Played well this week.
Played well, didn't he?
Played well,
yeah. More of an outside one. I respect that pick.
Was up in the vanguard on day one and then it sort of fell apart a little bit. But was he top 10 in the end or just outside the top 10? So, Tyrrell for me. Do
he was top 10.
Do Europeans get up for WGC events more than Americans? It's a real opportunity to get a lot of world ranking points outside of majors, obviously.
And also if they're dual memberships, they get a lot of FedEx Cup points as well.
I think for these guys, certainly the top players in the world who are going to be playing, like European, American, it's a world golf championship. It's literally a world event. Everyone's going to be up for it, you'd hope.
Let's hope so.
Not suffer from heat exhaustion.
Should be a good event this week. That is your lot. Next week, we will have a full review of the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official app, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But for now, from Robert Lee. Robert, are you going my way? But can you give me a lift home?
Rory and Xander.
Can you give
Rory
me a,
and
can
Xander
you give me
I'm going for this week.
You know, John Hawksworth gives me a lift home every single week he's on the show. Are you going my way?
How can a man not drive a car who's sort of beyond the age of 14, which you are, and you can't drive?
Not mental age. Peter, thanks for your company.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're not going my way, are you?
Which way are you going? No.
You're back up north. It is goodbye from all of us on the team. We will speak again next week.